Well, welcome along again to another episode of From the Horse's Mouth, and a very busy weekend for us. And today, it's time for a bit of R&R. We got Ruby and Rory looking ahead to Chester, and let's not forget a bit of market raising as well thrown in there by ITV. Thank you very much, ITV. But before we get the thoughts from the lads, I just want to throw out some free bets. Would you like a 50 quid free bet? It's very easy. All you have to do is tweet any Paddy Power tweet or retweet, quote tweet any Paddy Power tweet that has us in it, essentially about this show, and make sure you use the hashtag FTHM. Say something nice about the show and you will very, very easily go in to a hash to win a free 50 quid bet. Simple as that. So if you want a free bet, or at least a chance of winning a free bet, that will take you about 30 seconds to say something nice. Something like, Ruby Walsh is great, which you hear often, Ruby. Fortunately, you're not on Twitter. I'm telling you, it's wall-to-wall good stuff.
I'd say it is, yeah. There's a reason I'm not on Twitter, PK, and it's definitely because not the picture you're painting, anyway.
Wall-to-wall, nothing but positivity on Twitter and all social media channels. Roy, you're an avid user of social media. You haven't decided that enough is enough yet.
No, in fairness, I've deleted my Facebook account some time ago. I was never one for MySpace. I missed that whole push. So it's pretty much just Twitter for me. It does the job. When you're in this business, Twitter is very handy for finding things out and stirring things up.
I wonder if Elon's going to make it any different. I don't know. I'm not as worried as everyone else is anyway. Not as worried as everyone else. Right, lads. We are actually recording before the first race at Chester on day one. That's how very much we're getting the content out early. So I know there has been rain today as we record, which means that the soft ground, I'm not sure how much more there is, but look, we're playing a little bit of a guessing game with it going, but hopefully it's going to be no extremes anyway. And I'm sure the first 2 days were brilliant and the lads tipped up loads of winners. I'm intrigued to see how Enfranchise goes on the Thursday. By the way, Rory, on the Wednesday podcast, you did tip that one up. And I note that Frank Hickey, who is listening to you intently, there was 7-1 available. Would you like to know what price Frank Hickey went?
I saw what price Frank Hickey went, and that's the biggest compliment I can get at this stage. And of course, when the horse trails in last, it won't look so good. But yeah, I saw Frank went in 4-1. So
just over half
clearly,
the price.
Clearly, my enthusiasm rubbed off a little bit.
The lowest price in the village. Talk about ducking it. Yeah, you could tell that Frank has got some, because he said, I'm going to be pricing this race up, and I've been listening. Anyway, hopefully he's done the business. Well, obviously, by the time you listen to this, you probably figured that out by now. Let's talk about Friday. It's Chester Cup Day. We're going to get things underway with the 130. It's a good quality handicap over 7.5 furlongs. The top weight is going to be very interesting. Ryan Moore, William Haggis combining with Busala, a horse who's fairly lightly raced, only 3 runs last year. As the top weight brings a rating of 104 to the party, one of only 2 horses with a triple figure rating. David Probert rides Red Mirage, who was a winner in the All Weather last night. Boardman, who was tipped up in a few places. He's a previous course and distance winner and obviously of interest. So, Ruby, go to you first. The ICM Stellar Sports Earl Grosvenor Handicap.
Yeah, look, Busala, I suppose, wasn't entitled to be chinned in the Doncaster Mile, first time up, the chinned a rating of 112. Busala's only 104. But Tempest did finish in front of Busala, who's 101. Might just be a slight concern there with that PK, that you couldn't at least beat the horses rated around you. Maybe the weights suggest you shouldn't have, but that would be a slight concern for me. 5 is a decent enough draw. Tom Frey seems to improve for a run. Looking back in his career, Fool's Rush in, Hugo Palmer was always likely to be highly represented here at Chester. Now he's taken over from Tom Dascombe, and Fool's Rush in does have some Chester form. Struggled early, a couple of starts over 6 furlongs, was only third in its first 2 starts at Chester before beating Sir Benedict last July off a mark of 86. Followed it up over at Haydock then when it beat Il Bandito off 89, and then won again at Chester when it beat Titan Rock. So does seem to handle the track. That was off 93, now rated 95. So it's definitely on the shortlist, or anyone's shortlist. Revich was no match for Johan in the Lincoln, but this looks a slight drop in class for that. And Boardman, who I seemed to follow over a cliff last year and then avoided him in Haydock on his first start back, 90 seems to be his level to win off, and he's up £2 to 92. Red Mirage came from well off the pace at Suttle last time out. But I'm going to stick with Fool's Rush in. I think has a decent draw at Ben Curtis, drawn in stall 4. First time up, has form off the back of a break.
Yeah,
a
reminder. Good shout that by Ruby that Hugo Palmer taking over Tom Dascombe, who targeted this meeting for his governor, Michael Owen, with a lot of horses. So Fool's Rush in looking for a third win at the track. Rory?
Yeah, I'd be quite keen to see how Hugo Palmer's horses get on. On the first couple of days of this meeting, because this would be a real um, watershed moment, I suppose, for the stable. You know, first the May meeting at Chester is very important for the U1 yard, and Hugo Palmer very keen to get off to flying start there. So be interested to see how they go early. And Fool's Rush In is clearly quite an interesting one because he's got the speed to hold a good position, and he can't go well fresh. So he's an obvious enough one there. There are one or two I like as projects later in the season. Tomf, I'm sure, has got a race in him this year, having been frustrating. I saw him in the paddock at Newbury last September and thought he was coming back to hand. He ran well in his next two starts and then disappointed at Doncaster at the end of the season. I think you can probably forgive that. And he will win races off a reduced mark this season. But as Ruby says, he might just need the run coming back. And he stuck out in stall 10, which is not ideal. I'll be annoyed if he goes in first time out, because he's a horse I want to keep on side at some stage this season. And I do like Boardman, but I see the only firm he priced is up. I put him in at a reasonably short price favourite, and the chances are that others will follow suit. I didn't think he was badly handicapped going up £2 for Haydock, especially as he defied the ground there. I thought the ground was too quick for him at Haydock, and I was against him on the day. I thought he was, you know, his return was very promising at Redcar. And I thought he was ready to win, but I thought he'd want a little bit of dig in the ground to do so. He'll have ideal conditions here. I think 7.5 furlongs, it's a very unusual trip, but I think it suits Boardman really well. So I think he deserves to be favourite, but I don't know if I want to be going in quite as short as he is at the moment. If others go up closer to 4-1, that would tempt me in, but I'm not sure that's going to happen. So it's quite a tricky one. I think I'd probably end up at the current prices going in with Revitch, who's, again, a horse who doesn't quite stay a mile. He stays almost all the way at a mile, but it's just a little bit weak at the finish. And this extended 7 furlong suits him very well. He's got good course form. He's drawn in stall 1 as well. He can usually hold a good pitch. Occasionally, he's slowly away. He was beaten over 7 furlongs here in September after starting slowly, and he wouldn't want to be doing that here. But Harry Davis claiming the 7 off him makes him look pretty well treated on the best of last season's form. And if he can get away on terms from stall 1, I think he'd go very close.
The wonder kid, Harry Davies. Yeah, everyone talking about this kid. £7 claim. How long will that last? So a couple of shouts there in Fool's Rush In and Revitch from Ruby and Rory. Move to the Deep Ridge handicap. It's 2:05. This race is over 1.25 miles. Jamie Spencer and Richard Hughes combined with Brentford Hope in the Ballymore silks, the Sean Mulryan silks. And that might make the market at the time recording, waiting on prizes. But I'd say that's going to be towards the top. Mujtaba looked very smart as a 3-year-old, winning 3 out of 3 for William Haggis. But well beaten. Let's say well beaten. Was ran, obviously, in the Lincoln and was beaten 5 lengths, went back in 10th. Again, a very interesting horse story. So good race, this. A couple of good handicaps to kick off the card.
Yeah, I think, and the weather might be key here. If it was genuinely soft, I'd fancy Brentford Hope, even off his big weight. He's a horse that Richard Hughes has just struggled to find the key with. When he's won, he's looked very, very impressive. He disappointed once or twice, but he was placed twice in group company towards the end of last season. But the key to him seems to be racing on soft or heavy ground. On those conditions, he's got a very, very solid record. He goes through the ground beautifully, travels very smoothly, and if you've seen some of his wins, you know, he looks like he's miles ahead of his mark, but he doesn't need too much to go wrong to stop him. And I'd be against him unless it came up genuinely soft. And at the moment, it looks like we're probably looking at good to soft ground, but there's still a bit of rain around potentially on Friday. And if that arrives, then I might change my view on him. Mujtaba, I don't know where I stand with him. He was punted off the boards in the Lincoln, backed as if defeat was out of the question, and ran pretty disappointingly. I know he wasn't beaten. It's beaten 4.5 lengths, but he had plenty in his favour. He was drawn on the right side of the track. He had the right horses to pull him into the race, and he just didn't really fire. It may well be that he wasn't as far forward as his trainer thought he was. And I think a few of William Haggis's have shown that the team are maybe a little bit slower to come to hand than they were this time last year. So Mujtaba might well benefit enormously from that run and get right back on the up and up this year. He is a course winner, of course. I didn't think he was enormously impressive when he won here last year. He was 4s on and he got the job done, but I wouldn't say he was improved for the track. So I can probably leave him alone. And I think my pick in this race would be Baryshnikov. He is a hold-up horse who can be slowly away. And you normally think of that as being a really bad thing at Chester. But over this trip, the draw is not necessarily a huge issue, particularly in a field of this size. And it looks like, generally speaking, you get a good pace at Chester to run at. because everyone's aware that track position tends to be very important here. You got Baker's Boy, who's going to go forward from the outside stall. Now he's out and out front runner, and he'll need to go hard to get into that position from the start. So he's going to go hard. Brentford Hope tends to make the running as well. A couple of these always race prominently. So I think there's going to be plenty of pace on here. And Baryshnikov is going to be coming off the back of the field. In fields of sort of 12 or bigger around Chester, you need a lot of luck for that to happen. But when there's a bit of ease in the ground, then you can come from off the pace as long as you can pick your way through. And that suits Baryshnikov. He's also a course and distance winner in his time, suited by a turning track, as he again showed at Pontefract last time. And he's another one that the more rain that falls, the better it will suit him.
Baryshnikov looking for a third course and distance win. Ruby?
I wasn't mad strong on anything. The only kind of line I was finding was maybe Just Fine ran into Majestic Dawn last time out, last September, at Salisbury. And obviously Majestic Dawn is going to take on Al Azi in our next race. So maybe Majestic John maybe wasn't a handicapper in a handicap on that occasion. And Just Fine may have ran better than it looks, beating 5.5 lengths in second at Salisbury last September for Sir Michael Stout. The Queen and Ryan Moore, again, likes to come from off the pace, plenty of pace as we've just heard from Rory. So I'm going to go with Just Fine, but not overly confident.
Just Fine. A far from platinum tip from Ruby in the platinum year for the old Jelly Bean. She's had a couple of tough years, isn't she? Well, Pierce Morgan snapping at the heels. So maybe she'll get a winner with Just Fine in that race. Of course, disappointed to see her horse pulled out of the Derby, Reach for the Moon. So that one is going to be all set for Royal Ascot, I'm sure.
Here at Paddy Power, we want our gambling to be fun and encourage our customers to bet responsibly. That's why we offer a number of tools to help you stay in control, including the ability to set deposit limits, get reminders after a certain amount of time playing, and to take breaks. For more information, visit responsiblegaming.paddypower.com. 18+, begambleaware.org.
Right, the 240s, the Huxley Stakes, five runners, classy enough race this one. It's a Group 2, so you're looking for horses who potentially could look to get into the Prince of Wales late on if they manage to win this very comfortably. Solid Stone, Magellan or McGallan for Frankie Dettori and John Thady Gosden and the Cracksman. So it's going to make the market here. Al Azi, well, what's happened to him? He looked a real superstar, but things have just not gone to plan. William Haggis, Jim Crowley combined. Ruby, your thoughts? This is a decent race.
It is a decent race, but I don't know if we're overly concerned about what's happened to Al Azi. At the end of 2020, he was last behind Mogul, came back then, won at Newbury, beat Tundras at Newbury, was second to Pile Driver at Epsom, and then behind Sir Ron Priestley at Newmarket before trailing off. But he had done the same in 2020. So I'd be thinking a fresh, revitalised Al Azi after a winter off. Usually it's a summer off, but after a winter off, could be the one. Obviously McGallan started well last year when he beat Legion of Honor at Newcastle, was then second in the Dante, went to Sean T for the Prix de Jockey Club behind St Mark's Basilica. But I don't know, I'd be with Al Azi. Be interesting to see what Rory thinks.
It would. I forgot to give prices. 13-8 McGallan. Al Azi 15-8, 7-2 Solid Stone, 8-1 Majestic Dawn, who we mentioned earlier on, and 14-1 Certain Lad. Right, Rory?
Yeah, I think these the front two will flip-flop in the market. I think Al Azi will go off a strong favourite here. The question is whether you absolutely trust him to get the job done, but he's fundamentally a Group 2 horse, isn't he? He looked different class in his first two races last season, and then when he stepped up to Group 1 company in the Coronation Cup, again, he travelled like the best horse in the race, but you find out that what he does is travel very well into it, and he gives everything he can on the bridle. Now, we tend to be very rude about horses like that and say they're ungenuine because they don't find any extra. But essentially, you can argue that they're actually a bit more genuine because everything they're doing it generously. They're giving it without being asked for it. And when they're asked, when they need to be asked for an extra effort, there isn't an extra effort in them because they're doing it already. And whether you want to call them names or not is irrelevant. As a punter, you just need to understand these horses and know when to get them. And I think the time to catch Al Azi is pretty early in the season and below Group 1 company. And I think he's got a pretty straightforward task here, to be honest. McGallan has reasonably solid form, but I think he's hit his ceiling, hasn't he? You know, that was it was a good run in the Earl of Sefton last time out, but it's on a par with the best of his form. He's not a superstar. He will pick up races this season, but Al Azi does have that little bit more class. Even when he finished fourth of five at Newbury, if you stop that race with a furlong to go, you know, you'd be writing his name in the results as the winner of that. Ascot was one race too many, and the track at Ascot wouldn't suit him. He's the kind of horse who needs to be produced for a turn of foot. And he isn't a grinder, and Ascot needs a bit of a grinder, and that's that didn't suit him. He had a bit of a break mid-season in a bid to try to get him fresh again, and it didn't quite work for him. But he's had plenty of time off the track now. He'll be suited by this track. Even if you think he's a little bit of a thinker, Chester's a good track for horses like that. I was brought up saying that, you know, if you want to back an ungenuine horse who's capable of winning races, but, you know, doesn't want to be distracted too much, Chester's a great coach for them, because, you know, they're always on the turn, and it keeps them sweet all the way around. Whether that's absolutely true or not, I don't know, but that used to be the theory. I think the track will suit him really well. I think he'd be ready for this in his return. I think he's just a little bit better than McGallan. And because of how he travels in his races, I think people will back him at those prices. I think he'd go off closer to even money.
Okay, I have a couple of questions here. I was always brought up to be told that thinking horses, you can get them around Chester. That's a hell of an upbringing, Rory. I mean,
school as such, but at my second school, I used to hang around the betting shop from when I was about... I used to sit in the car as my dad put his Yankee on a Saturday, and he'd bring me a slip and I'd write it out. And then when I was 12 years old, he said, right, the time has come for you to get into the betting shop yourself and do that. So from the age of 12, I was spending my time in betting shops when I wasn't at school. And I was taught a lot of lessons in life, because people see a youngster in a betting shop, and where I grew up, you might want to chase them out the door, but they think that there's a young impressionable lad who needs to learn a few lessons about life. So I'll give him the benefit of my wisdom. So I got the benefit of a lot of wisdom those early years.
You've got the start of a book here, Rory, I think. All these pearls of wisdom that you received as a teenager in betting shops. I mean, there's got to be, when I say pearls, there's got to be some pearls.
Oh, yes.
Brilliant stuff. Okay, so we'll keep out. That's two votes for Al Azzie from the lads. And two pretty confident votes. I wonder what price it'll be by the time you hear this, because as I said, at the time of recording, 15-8 second favourite. Right, the Chester Cup. It's arguably the feature of the week. At the 3:15 on the Friday, 17 horses facing the starter. Hopefully all go. I'll give the prices now as we record. 5-1 Solon Getaway. Falcon 8 for Frankie Dettori and Dermot Weld. 6-1. I think the hurdling career just hasn't quite worked out for him. Coltrane 13-2, 7-1 Cleveland for Ryan Moore and Aidan O'Brien, very lightly raced. 8-1 Nate the Great, 10-1 Arcadian Sunrise. This horse, I'd say, a lot of people have in their mind as a Galway hurdle winner. 11-1 Roginski, 12-1 Land of Winter, and 14-1 and Big of the Rest. I'll go back to you, Rory. We've got a usual mix of a few jumps horses and a few flat horses in here. Interesting little contest.
It is an interesting little contest, and it's interesting looking at the betting there, because the horse that I was thinking of putting up as an each way bet at a big price is not a big price, but he is elsewhere, interestingly enough.
Okay, so, all right. Were you talking to Frank again?
So Frank was obviously thinking along the same lines as me. I quite like Nate the Great. Again, I think he's a little bit of a thinker to me. He's not really particularly well suited by small field races. Which has been racing in for a lot of the last year. I think he'd be better suited by the hustle and bustle of a race like the Chester Cup. He's been there and done it and got the T-shirt. He ran pretty well last time out in the All-Weather Marathon, finishing a close fourth to Earl of the Cotswolds. His form this winter on the All-Weather has been similar, but he handles soft ground on turf. He will travel well. He will sit handily as well. You know, he's a horse who likes to sit reasonably close to the pace, which he did when he won at Newcastle in his penultimate start. I suppose you could argue that on his profile, he's more of a horse for the Northumberland Plate later in the year, when that race, despite being, it should be a well-run two-mile handicap, tends to turn into a bit of a crawl, and horses are well-placed to do well in it. But Chester, obviously a similar sort of track position, even over this 2.25 miles, should be fairly important. So I want to have something that can take a good position. The temptation is always to find something drawn low and think that'll just tuck in. But the number of times I've backed horses who've tucked in just behind the leaders from a low draw, and you're screaming for the last circuit, where are you going to go? Where's the gap coming? And he won't really need a gap because of the way he'll be ridden a little bit wider of runners from stall 12. He doesn't need cover, which is really important, I think. If you've got a horse that doesn't need cover, then it gives a jockey a lot more scope to put it where he wants in the race. And with horses who tend to pull hard or need cover in the races, you've got to sacrifice your track position to get that cover in the first place. Whereas Nate the Great, I think he will be on the shoulders of the leaders reasonably early in the race. He will travel well. He stays the trip. He comes here in good form and fully fit. I wouldn't absolutely trust him in a finish normally. You know, I'd say if you've backed him pre-race, you tend to want to get out of him at some stage. But I think Chester will suit him again. And I think, you know, with extra places on offer here, I think he hits the frame at least. And if everything drops his way, he's capable of winning.
Frank and Rory definitely down the same lines. We're 8-1 at the time of recording. As you rightly said, Rory, there's significantly bigger elsewhere. And often what can happen is those two kind of align. So you could be looking at maybe double figure price with Paddy. Check the latest odds. Right, Ruby, your thoughts on the Chester Cup?
Yeah, look, Falcon 8 won it last year from stall 10. I wouldn't be too concerned about his hurdling career, PK, when jumping as a six-year-old. He's also by Galileo, and they're definitely not. Jumping doesn't improve Galileo's, in my humble opinion, as brilliant a flat stallion as he was. So I still think Falcon 8 is capable of you know, running to a decent level on the flat. He's £5 higher than he was last year. I think Arcadian Sunrise definitely is one to respect and can run well fresh. Ran a big race last year at the Punchestown Festival, his first run of the season off a winter layoff, and was unlucky on that occasion in a frantically run race. Is of interest, Jamie Spencer rode him to win at York and he beat Rajinsky over 2 miles, up £7 for that. But as you said, I wouldn't be surprised if this is a stepping stone to the Ascot Stakes for him. 97, he's too high, isn't he? 90, no, it's not, it's 100. He'd just about get into the Ascot Stakes, so it could be a stepping stone for him.
Unless he wins here.
Yeah, I think Metier is definitely of interest. Off a mark of 89, Safi Osborne takes 3 off Metier's back, 8-stone 3. On hurdle ratings, going through the other jumpers in the race, he could be well in, but he does like a dig in the ground. So Metier will definitely want any drop of rain that falls to help his chance. And I thought the one that was really interesting was Cleveland. Off the back of a 2-year layoff on his last start on his reappearance at Nace, he hadn't run since November of 2020, March 2022. He turned up behind Lafayette. Now, Lafayette has done that form the world of good. Lafayette won at the Curragh on Sunday when it beats Bear Story. Chris Hayes rode Lafayette to win the Mooresbridge Stakes. So the form is definitely strong. I just think it's really interesting that Aidan O'Brien is jumping from 10 furlongs to 18 furlongs in one whack with the 4-year-old Cleveland. And by Camelot should stay. Ryan Moore rides drawn in stall 10. Winner came from there last year. Just think that's really interesting.
Okay, keep an eye out for Nate the Great and Cleveland in the Chester Cup. That's Joe for 3:15 live on ITV. One more race from Chester for the week. It's the Boodle's Secret Garden Condition Stakes. I don't know if Boodles are big Springsteen fans. Not a bad tune, that one. This race is just a 7-runner. Oh, the 7 runners as per usual. Flaming Rib will be the Hugo Palmer representative in the famous Michael Owen Silks, a winner, full 4 starts last year, 6th on debut. And guess what? Is a course winner, perhaps unsurprisingly. Some nice horses in here. King's Lynn in the Queen's Colours. Knight on Earth, a previous course and distance winner. And Blue de Vega, who pops up at big prices every now and again, including last time out. Okay, Ruby, straight back to you for this sprint.
Yeah, obviously the 3-year-old allowance swings this in Flaming Rib's favour over King's Lynn, both being rated 108, but King's Lynn has to carry 9-stone 12, being a 5-year-old. Flaming Rib is a 3-year-old, is only carrying 9-stone 3. That said, all of Flaming Rib's best form, for me anyway, maybe Rory will think differently, is at 6 furlongs. They win over 5 at Nottingham when it beat Amazonian Dream this week last year, then went to Epsom a second over 6. Was no match for Chipotle over 5 at Ascot. I imagine that was in the Windsor Castle, was it? Yeah, yeah. In the Windsor Castle. But you know, I did win at York last year when I was there, beat Pocket Rocket over 6. I'm just not sure about 5 for Flaming Rib. And I know the last half a furlong over the sprint distance in Chester, horses do tend to slow down, but I'm still drawn to the top horse, King's Lynn. I just think it's run to a higher standard than the 3-year-old Flaming Rib, and I'm going to go with King's Lynn.
2 runners in the Queen's Colours tipped up by Ruby Walsh. She's looking for an invite to the Platinum Celebrations, are you, Ruby?
Yeah.
And a knighthood. Sir Ruby Walsh. Right, Rory, your thoughts on the concluding race on ITV?
Yeah, I like Flaming Rib, but I take Ruby's point about the trip, and of course they stepped him up to 7 for the Greenham on his return, and I thought the way he ran last season that he might get 7 furlongs. So the drop back to 5 doesn't look an obvious move. And although he gets plenty of weight, you don't get many 3-year-old winners of this race. He didn't have any runners last year. I suspect the 3-year-olds aren't particularly well represented in it anyway. But the 1 3-year-old who has won this race in the last 10 years did come from the same yard That was Sheik and Boogie. It was driven by Tom Dascombe a couple of 2019, so the penultimate running. But yeah, the drop in trip to 5 furlongs doesn't look obvious. It's not like he blazed speed at Newbury and then faded. He was in trouble from the start after missing the break. And he never got involved. He wasn't beaten a long way in the end, and I don't think it was a terrible run from him. It suggests that he retained all his ability and is a really likable horse. But as a son of Ribchester, you wouldn't expect him to be an out-and-out 5 furlong horse. So I think he's got a bit to do there. King's Lynn is going to need a bit of luck around here, I think. He's a horse I liked a lot last year. He's probably still going to improve a bit further. But he does also stay 6 furlongs, and he wants to come from the back of the field. So he's going to need to pick his way through the field. But on the plus side for him, there are only 7 runners, and there should be a strong pace with King of Stars and Knight on Earth to go for. King of Stars is declared on the opening day, isn't he? So whether he turns up or not is another matter. So that'd be an interesting one. I don't know whether I haven't checked whether he's still engaged today as we speak. So he would be obvious pace in that race, and this would be a more realistic race to run him in, I think, than the one he's in where he's badly drawn on the opening day. And I think Knight on Earth is also declared. So both the Mick Appleby runners have got declarations earlier in the week. So whether the intention is to turn both of them out again or to see how they are and run one of the two, they're both front runners. Whichever one of them runs is the likeliest pace setter in here. But the chances are that the 7 runners we have will go down to 6 or even 5. And that will play into King's Lynn's hands because he won't have to worry too much about traffic with only 5 runners in the race. But I would think if either of the Appleby runners turns up, they'd have a chance of causing a bit of a shock. They both have a bit to do on the ratings, but they are raw speed in this race, whereas most of the field want a little bit further or are hard to win with. Clam Express might be the odd one out there in that he, I wouldn't say he didn't train on last season, but he just struggled to find his form as a 3-year-old. But he's shown in 2 runs this year in Maidan that he's as good as he ever was, and he might be a player there as well. Again, his best form is at 5, but he does stay 6 as well. I'm inclined to sit in the fence here and say, see if Mick Appleby runs one of his, and if he does, then take a chance on it.
That's fine this far out. But realistically, it's all building up to the 150 mark raised anyway, folks. From sprinters at Chester to a 3-mile handicap chase with 7, unfortunately, declared for the race. We're hoping for 8, but we got the 7. Poor old Jerry's back in the JP Silks. Is now Ben Haslam. It's never a good sign. That one is one of quite a few double-figure aged horses here. I thought this was a veteran stage when I originally looked at it. It's 10 or older, apart from the bottom two, Royal Pretender for Alan King and Railway. I want to say Mice, but I'm not sure of the pronunciation.
Mwika.
Mwika? What's that? Yeah.
What's Paul Flynn.
As in pigs.
Sorry.
The dam was called Ermundenwika. She was a very, very smart mare for John Joe back in the day. And Ermundenwika means on the pig's back.
There you go.
There you
go. That's why he's here. And this was ex-Paul Flynn, you were saying, Ruby, this Railway Mwika.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it is running around in Ireland for ages, wasn't it? Railway Mwika.
It was, yeah.
Trainer in September 2021. And its rating in Ireland, its last rating with fences was 80, has snuck back to 109 in the UK with 3 wins, one off 104 wins. Market raising twice at Huntingdon and last time at market raising again.
Done well. Yeah, done well. Your thoughts on the race, Ruby?
I liked Royal Pretender. First run over fences, comes here off its hurdle mark of 124, just failed by a nose to beat One True King here at market race number 27 on its last start. The extra furlong will suit, and in a race, PK, that I think is full of exposed horses, it is the only possible unexposed one.
Yeah, very much so. Thought that might be one that you'd be interested in. Rory?
Well, that was my angle into the handicap chase at Worcester on Thursday.
Let's hope it works.
It was back the chase debutant who was handicapped on hurdles form but was liable to improve for going over fences, and Royal Pretender fits the bill here. Ruby's spot on. I like Railway Mwika. He's done really well for Sarah Humphrey, but he's up to a mark of 114 now, having been exposed off much lower marks. He'll run his race again. He's very straightforward. He'd probably make the running too. Only getting £10 from Royal Pretender, who's got pretensions to be a bit better than that. I think he might just struggle to beat the younger horse, assuming Royal Pretender jumps adequately on chase debut. But Alan King's runners going into handicap chases straight over from hurdles tend to do pretty well. And it's usually from the top trainers, it's usually a sign that they're confident they'll be able to do themselves justice rather than running them in small field maiden chases. So if a trainer runs a horse like this straight into a handicap, it's almost always a sign of intent and it's a sign of confidence as well.
Yeah, but he's a fast
trainer. Finishing my homework, PK, that I even realized it was first time over fences because my mind would automatically think like Ireland, where if you're in a handicap chase, you have at least run over fences.
Can't do that in Ireland anymore, no?
You can now. Up horses rated 95, I think, who have run at least six times over hurdles can run off their
hurdle mark.
Hurdle mark in a chase. It's not a move, not something I'm in favour of. I think you should head off into beginner's chases and get your
and get chase stuck. Mark. And get stuffed by Willie Mullins' horse at 1-4. Yeah.
No, I think it's more complex than that. You can make it as jovial if you wish, and I make it as lighthearted as that. But
that's my job.
They're two different disciplines, and I'm not sure the handicapper can be expected to rate a horse over hurdles for it to be running over fences.
Well, the great, a late great Noel O'Brien, who was a very, very strong family friend. Obviously, my dad worked with Noel a lot for many years, was always over. He was... always a big fan of you get a handicap mark over hurdles and you get a handicap mark over fences. Cause I remember there was a few in the UK. I'm thinking like Jack the Giant, did he win a Ladbroke at Ascot off a really like he had a very strong mark over or high mark over fences and he, you know, exploited it over hurdles for Nicky Henderson. I think it was Jack the Giant. And I think they were thinking of marrying
the new. That's where it came about with the Marion because I even rode one Tyrannus who had run over hurdles, then went chase and progressed to be a much better chaser, came back to win a valuable handicap hurdle at Sandown one afternoon. But I think when you look at, and the ones that spring to mind are the most obvious ones are horses of Henry de Bromhead's, like Put the Kettle On, Notebook, horses like that were pretty ordinary hurdlers but went way further over fences. To me, you're just opening the door to let only exposed hurdlers run right over fences. And then they marry the mark and bring it with it in the UK. I think they're two different sports, and plenty of horses went back from winning over fences that couldn't win over hurdles.
Yeah, totally agree. I do agree. And I only make light of it, Ruby, because it's my job. It's my job.
I know, I didn't mean it that way, PK. I think it's a pretty...
The difficult thing with it is an ideal world, you'd give a horse three runs over fences to get a mark. And it's just with the program we have in the UK and in Ireland, I don't think that's workable. You have to have one run to at least give an indication of what you are. But there's always going to be scenarios you're going to exploit there. And you're always going to end up essentially starting off reasonably close to your hurdles mark. And as long as you find out straight away, and as long as horses are going, I don't mind if horses are going straight into chases, as triers in handicaps, even because the trainer thinks that they're potentially well in, it helps punters because you know what you're expecting in that race anyway. It's not ideal, but again, there are a lot of issues regarding handicapping that aren't ideal. And as long as it's rowing in the right direction, then I'm fundamentally positive about it.
Do you want to go with it? Would you ever?
No, not in a million years.
what would be your discipline? If you had to handicap one discipline, what would it be, Rory?
I prefer to be chasers than anything else. To be perfectly honest, yeah.
Fair enough.
If you want to go the other way, 2 year olds.
Well, yeah, you get most of summer off. Well, not most of summer off. You get a lot of the winter off anyway.
Yeah.
Happy days. Yeah. I always wondered, my dad was a handicapper. What are you doing during the summer, Dad? Or during the winter? There was no Dundalk back then, but he was busy enough. He managed to look busy anyway. Right. Before I let you go, lads, Ruby, I noted that Friday night, 8:20, just when punters are getting ready for a couple of jars after their dinner, looking forward to Friday evening. Well, Willie Mullins is sending one all the way up to Downpatrick, and Patrick Mullins is riding it. It's a horse in the bumper, obviously, called High City Roller. Now, this horse was sent off favourite at Clonmel back in March, sent off a hot favourite of 6-5, beaten 133 lengths. So what happened, or tell us about this High City Roller?
No idea. Patrick just picked the wrong one again. Jody won at Clark Kent. I don't know. PK ran terrible. It's by Arcadio, out of High Performer, who's by Bob Back. Be no reason for it not to have some ability. But look, it was bitterly disappointing. It's 45 days since it ran. It goes to Downpatrick. Usually a well water track. I'd imagine that's why Willie is sending High City Roller to Downpatrick. But look, terrible run in his first start. can't possibly run any worse.
I'd say the old staff are delighted. The old groom is absolutely delighted. Friday night, what are you doing? Oh, I'm heading up to Downpatrick for one runner in the A20.
Friday night, Downpatrick gives you Saturday, at least Saturday morning off. And if it's your weekend off, that means you're off completely Saturday and Sunday.
Happy days. Well, I hope that is the case for the poor staff. I have to head up for the A20 and only the A20. Listen, lads, it's been a great fun over the week, over Chester week. And we will be back tomorrow. We'll be looking ahead to a very busy weekend. Loads of trials, Derby trials on both sides of the Irish Sea. We'll be covering all of those. Until then, stay safe, stay well. And don't forget, if you want your chance to get in with, or to be in with the chance of winning a 50 quid free bet, all you got to do is quote tweet any Paddy Power tweet that involves this particular podcast. Use the hashtag FTHM. Say something nice like Ruby Walsh always does, and you'll be in with a chance of winning 50 quid. Even he knows that's not true. Right, until tomorrow, stay safe, stay well, stay lucky, as I said.